كانت من الناس عزنا جنا سلكيا شكسو سملتان زينة أسماء سري هربين سري سيطان يمر بيستام ستفيتام دين بوتلي سيام بقدام مايام بتاتي سابناتيكام Manjika Padurvasya Kripa Sindhu Vaivita Pritanam Bhaginebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. In the concluding chapter of the seventh canto, it's chapter 15, Narada Muni is instructing Yudhisthira as to the proper behavior of civilized human beings. A civilized human being is one who is following the scriptural injunctions, and he's allowing those to regulate his life, because those scriptural injunctions will elevate him in consciousness. And this is the actual purpose of life, of human life, to become elevated in consciousness. Nowadays, it is so rare that someone thinks in this way, that there is something internally elevating to be achieved with our life. People usually think the accumulation of something material, either gross or subtle, is life's goal. But of course, clearly it is not. Why make the goal of one's life something that will be left behind at the time of death? How many people in the history of the world have lived and died, their wealth dissipated, their fame forgotten, their love gone? Where is it all now? So why place the entire effort of our life into such fleeting goals that won't last? It is not very inspiring. It is like becoming a billionaire for a tenth of a second, or becoming famous for an eighth of a second, or even a second and a half. So what? Who cares? Or you'll become the strongest person in the world for a 17th of a 10-second period. Not very inspiring. Not something to use one's energy, life's potency for, life's shakti, prana, one's life. Why use it for something so fleeting? So we've heard of the different aspects of the following the Varnashrama system, how one learns to be satisfied, and that's the cause of happiness. One practices yoga to control his senses and to become realized, to realize the super soul within the heart. And one becomes renounced. One can perform sacrifices, all according to the Vedic formulas. So now, after discussing Gaur and Itai and Krishna Balaram in relationship to the workings of the material body and becoming renounced and getting the strength to becoming renounced from Gaur and Itai, from Krishna Balaram. Now, the topic will change to Nivritti and Pravritti Marg. Nivritti means the process or the path of abnegation. Marg means the road or the path. Abnegation, where one is not trying to enjoy material things. There are two ways not to try to not enjoy material things. One way is by aversion, and one way is neutrality. Devotees are neutral when it comes to the material world, seeing it as Krishna's, just as we're neutral when we see another's property. Not averse to the material world. No, I can't look at it. I can't see it. It's meant for Krishna. So that is the speciality of devotees. They see everything as Krishna's. Because, why? What is the potency that fills them, that allows them to do that? It is love for Krishna. Premandana charita bhakti balochanena. So they see Krishna everywhere and see everything as his. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamayi pashyati. And pravritti marg, so those are the two ways of nivritti marg. One is the impersonalists take the aversion way. We don't want to engage in any activities because we don't want to become entangled. So therefore we renounce the material world. But the devotees say, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya. That how can I renounce the material world? How can one renounce something that isn't his own? It's Krishna, so how can I renounce it? Rather, I'll use it in his service. So that's the two aspects of nivritti marg. And then there is pravritti marg, where the performance of pious activities is done for the purpose of material elevation. So the verse begins. This is text 47. According to the Vedas, there are two kinds of activities, pravritti and nivritti. One for enjoyment and nivritti. One is pushing away the temporary for the eternal. Pravritti activities involve raising oneself from a lower to a higher condition of materialistic life. Whereas nivritti means the cessation of material desire. Through pravritti activities, one suffers from material entanglement. That's the result of pravritti, trying to act piously so that one can enjoy in this material world, doing good, performing proper sacrifices. But the result, ultimately, is that one has to remain within the material world, entangled within it, due to pious desires. But, the verse continues, by nivritti activities, that are done without any desire for material enjoyment, one is purified and becomes fit to enjoy eternal blissful life. We'll read most of this purport of Prabhupada's. We'll start a few sentences down, beginning. Bhakti, of course, does not depend on pious or impious activities. Because pravritti, the pravritti mode, the path of pravritti, engages one in piety. And what is the result of this type of piety? This is for enjoyment, for material enjoyment, because it is due to piousness, piety, punya, that one enjoys in this material world. And it is also due to pap, or sinful activities, which causes one to suffer. So avoiding the impious and acting on the pious level brings pleasure to one, either today or tomorrow. But bhakti doesn't actually depend upon one's material piety or one's material impiety. That was actually shown when Vrikashura was shown to be a devotee, Vritrasura rather, in the sixth canto. He was demonic by nature, which meant evil-hearted, against the authority of the Lord by fighting the demigods. But actually he was a great devotee. So Prickett Maharaj said, how is it possible this demon's a great devotee? So Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami quotes this to show how devotion or bhakti, devotional service, is independent, swatantra, independent of anything external. So by nivritti, oh, Prabhupada's explaining, bhakti, of course, does not depend on pious or impious activity. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 126, savai pamsam parodamo yato bhakti vidho jade ahaitikiya pratiyata yayapma supersedati. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So although bhakti is independent Prabhupada continues. Nonetheless, those who act piously have a better chance to become devotees. So it's not that we can act impiously and be devotees so easily, because our impiety gets in the way of our devotional service and it causes us to be attracted by other things. So piety can help, but it's not a cause of devotion. It's like plowing the field that makes it fertile. Punya karmanam. But it doesn't cause the wheat to grow. The plowing of the field doesn't cause wheat to grow. It's the seed of the wheat that causes it to grow, not the plowing of the field. But yet that plowing of the field makes the wheat grow strong and healthy. So those who act piously have a better chance to become devotees. Yesham tvantakata papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva moha vinyamuktam vajante mam dhridhavata. It allows piety, tvantakatam, finished with all sin, jananam punyakarmanam, who engaged in pious activities, it allows one, vajante mam, Krishna says, dhridhavata, with firm determination. Another quotation from Bhagavad Gita, quoted by Prabhupada. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam Dana Supitino Arjuna. O Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me. One who takes to devotional service, even with some material motive, is considered pious. And because he has come to Krishna, he will gradually come to the stage of bhakti. Then, like Dhruva Maharaj, he will refuse to accept any material benediction from the Lord. Swamin kritartasmi varam yache. Therefore, even if one is materially inclined, one may take to the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, or Gaura and Nittai, so that he will very soon be purified of all material desires. Chipram bhavati dhamma shashvat chanti nagachati. As soon as one is freed from inclinations towards pious and impious activities, he becomes a perfect candidate for returning home back to Godhead. So his inclination, a devotee's inclination, is just to please Krishna, and that is why he is called a devotee. So, Narada Muni is continuing about Nivritti. The ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices known as Agnihotri Yagya, Darsha Yagya, Purnamasi Yagya, Kshatamasi Yagya, Pashu Yagya, and some yagyas are all symptomized by the killing of animals and the burning of many valuables, especially food grains, all for the fulfillment of material desires and the creation of anxiety. So this is all descriptions of the yagyas, or sacrifice of pravritti mark. And what is the result of material life? The creation of anxiety. Material desires mean anxiety. Performing such sacrifices, worshipping Vaishvadeva, and performing the ceremony of Baliharan, which are all supposedly constitute the goal of life, as well as constructing temples for demigods, building resting houses and gardens, digging wells for the distribution of water, establishing booths for the distribution of food, and performing activity for public welfare, these are all symptomized by attachment to material desires. My dear King Yudhisthira, when oblations of ghee and food grains like barley and sesame are offered in sacrifice, they turn into celestial smoke which carries one to successively higher planetary systems like Dumra, Ratri, Krishna Paksha, Dakshinam, and ultimately the moon. Then, however, the performers of sacrifice descend to earth to become herbs, creepers, vegetables, and food grains. These are eaten by different living entities and turned into semen, which is injected into female bodies. Thus, one takes birth again and again. So by performing these sacrifices, the pravritti marg sacrifices, one gains so much piety that one can go to the heavenly planets and really enjoy on such a subtle level. One's existence is so peaceful, perfectly pure and peaceful, that one's heart is bursting with happiness and satisfaction, so different from the pleasures in this world, which are miserable in the beginning, middle, and end, practically speaking. But yet, even though enjoying on the subtler planes or planets, one still has to come down. And here the process of coming down and going up will be described. So, Bhagavad Gita clearly describes in many places that one comes down to the earth again, and therefore a Brahma Bhuvanoloka, Puna Avatana Arjuna, repeated birth and death. So therefore the happiness that's gained, even though it's lengthy, is considered flickering. Lengthy compared to earth, but still flickering. 52. A twice born Brahmin, a Dija, gains his life by the grace of his parents through the process of purification known as Garbhadhana. There are also other processes of purification until the end of life, when the funeral ceremony, Anyeshta Kriya, is performed. Thus, in due course, a qualified Brahmana becomes uninterested in material activities and sacrifices. So by virtue of these sanskaras or ceremonies, or acting in a purified way, one gradually becomes disinterested in material activities. And then, if one is actually disinterested in material enjoyment, thoroughly and actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura said, one has taken the greatest step towards spiritual realization. Because, as Prahlad Maharaj says, Matirana Krishna Paratakshvatova Mityovipadyeta Grihavatanam, that even if a person desires to enjoy material life, that if so many people talk to him and preach to him, or they gather a group or get together in twos or one person, nothing will change him, because he's taken grihadvritta, or the desire to enjoy. He's fixed in that kind of vow. But through the sanskaras, a pure person can become uninterested in material activities and sacrifices, but he offers the sensual sacrifices in full knowledge unto the working senses, which are illuminated by the fire of knowledge. So when the senses become illuminated by knowledge, knowledge means understanding that we're not our body, that we're eternal souls, and that we can't be happy on the bodily level. So when one's enlivened on that level, then he's disinterested in material life. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Those interested in materialistic activities remain in the cycle of birth and death. Pravritti marg, or the inclination to stay in the material world to enjoy varieties of sense gratification, has been explained in the previous verse. Now in this verse it is explained that one who has perfect brahminical knowledge rejects the process of elevation to higher planets and accepts nivritti marg. In other words, he prepares himself to go back home, back to Godhead. Those who are not brahmanas but atheists do not know what is pravritti marg or nivritti marg. They simply want to obtain pleasure at any cost. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore training devotees to give up the pravritti marg and accept the nivritti marg. Give up the enjoyment of the temporary to go to the realm of the eternal. To go on the nivritti marg in order to return home back to Godhead. This is a little difficult to understand, but it is very easy if one takes Krishna consciousness seriously and tries to understand Krishna. Why will understanding Krishna make nivritti marg more easily understandable? And Prabhupada says it's easy to understand. Why? Because if one understands who Krishna is and how sweet the dealings with Krishna are, then he will understand also the nature, the temporary, fleeting, frustrating nature of material happiness and trying to squeeze pleasure from the material world. And he will be attracted to the sweetness of Krishna. A Krishna conscious person can understand that performing jagya according to the karmakanda system is a useless waste of time. And merely giving up the karmakanda and accepting the process of speculation, it's also unfruitful. So karmakanda, jnanakanda are purpose. I'm going to quote that. Therefore, Narottama Das Thakur has sung in his Prem Bhakti Chandrika, karmakanda, jnanakanda, this is the karma section of the Vedas and the jnana or knowledge section of the Vedas, kevala, completely, visheda bandha. Means a pot of poison. Amrita balia jivakai. Nana yoni sada fire kadarja bhakshana kore tare janma ada pateyaya. A life of karmakanda or jnanakanda is like a poison pot, and one who takes to such a life is doomed. In the karmakanda system, one is destined to accept birth and death again and again. Similarly, with Jnanakanda, one falls down again to this material world. Only worship of the Supreme Person offers one the safety of going back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada is preaching strongly, as always, that we should not be satisfied attempting to join the material world, but rather we should make our attempt, our life's attempt, to go to Krishna. The mind is always agitated, this is 53, by waves of acceptance and rejection. Therefore, all the activities of the senses should be offered unto the mind, which should be offered unto one's words. Then one's words should be offered unto the aggregate of all alphabets, which should be offered unto the concise form of Omkar. Omkar should be offered unto the point Bindu, Bindu into the vibration of sound, and that vibration into the life air. Then the living entity, who is all that remains, should be placed in Brahman, the Supreme. That is the process of sacrifice. So a little bit hard to understand exactly how we should do this, but Prabhupada makes it practical. But the basic idea is that the senses work by the power of the mind, which is always grasping and pushing away different objects for enjoyment. So one by one, the senses should be, everything should be offered back and back and back and back to their sources, and ultimately everything should be offered back into Krishna, and that is the process of sacrifice. So everything should be offered, even the soul, when everything, all the matter and the temporary coverings are removed from the soul, then that soul is left and should be offered to Krishna, the Supreme. Purport. The mind is always agitated by acceptance and rejection, which are compared to mental waves that are constantly tossing. Being on a rough ocean, just being tossed around by the waves, is what it's like having a passionate mind who wants this and wants that and then doesn't want that and wants that, strongly grabbing that and pushing that, always pushing the us poor fools around. This is what it's like. It's so torturous. Sometimes after 10 japa, for 16 rounds or 8 rounds or something like that, and the mind's been unleashed during that time, and you're completely exhausted after what the mind, it's like you've been beaten up by the mind, mugged. You feel completely exhausted. Tossed around, accepted, rejecting. I want this, I don't want that. I should have told them that. Yes, no, yes, no. Whew. The living entity is floating in the waves of material existence because of its forgetfulness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura is therefore sung in his Gitavali, Miche Mayara Vashe Yachabeshe Kachahabu Duvubai. My dear mind, under the influence of Maya, you are being carried away by the waves of rejection and acceptance. Simply take shelter of Krishna. Jiva Krishna Dasi Vishvas Karleta Ardukonai. If we simply regard the lotus feet of Krishna as our ultimate shelter, we shall be saved from all these waves of Maya, which are variously exhibited by mental and sensuous activities and the agitations of rejection and acceptance. Interesting sentence. What did Prabhupada say? Anyone remember? Even by looking? Get free from the ocean, the waves? If we take shelter of Krishna, if we simply regard the lotus feet of Krishna as our ultimate shelter, then everything is easy. But that word simply is a very interesting word in there. What does simply mean in that case? Yeah, well, I accept Krishna's lotus feet as my shelter and I don't feel the great relief. I'm still being tossed like anything. But what's lacking is the simply. Because simply here means basically only and fully. Like a child, a baby simply knows his mother. Simply only. So if we simply accept the lotus feet of Krishna like a child simply accepts his mother in a very simple way, then karle means if we do this, dukkanai, no more unhappiness. But it's very hard to be simply. It's hard to accept the lotus feet, but it's harder to be simply accepting them. Krishna instructs in Bhagavad Gita, Savadamam Pratyajam Amekam Sharanam Raja Ham Tam Sava Papebhyo Moksha Shami Masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Therefore, if we simply, the word simply again, place ourselves at the lotus feet of Krishna by taking to Krishna consciousness and keeping always, another interesting word, always in touch with him by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we need not take much trouble in arranging to return to the spiritual world, simply and always. By the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is very easy. So it's easy, but simply and always is not so easy, at least from my experience. Complicatedly and sometimes is easier than simply and always. But by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is very easy. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kebalam, Kalo Anasteva Nasteva Gatiyanita. So the process of sacrifice, this offering of one thing to its source, brings us back of offering ourselves to Krishna, and that's what Savadama Pratyaja. We are Krishnas. Jeev Krishna Das, Evishvas, Karle, Ta, Dukonai, Ara Dukonai. No more misery if we offer ourselves back to Krishna. So now, but what's being described is the gradual process of elevation. So, and here, also being described in 54. This is also explained by Prabhupada in one of the purports in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter. On this path of ascent, of offering all the things back, the progressive living entity enters the different worlds of fire, the sun, the day, the end of day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, and passing of the sun in the north along with their presiding deities. When he enters Brahmaloka, he enjoys life for many millions of years. And finally, so when we think of that, he enjoys life for millions of years. What does that sound like to us? The concept that we have of enjoyment, it's not what that means. There's no movies and parties and videos and computer games and the stock market and discotheques and drinking and carousing. No, it's very subtle, so subtle and special and spiritual, almost spiritual, practically spiritual, so subtle, so deep, deeply peaceful. So by when he enters Brahmaloka, he enjoys life for many millions of years. That's enjoyment in practically in pure goodness. The enjoyment that we wish for in passion causes misery, according to the Bhagavad Gita. And finally, his material designation comes to an end. He then comes to a subtle designation from which he attains the causal designation, witnessing all previous states. Upon the annihilation of this causal state, he attains his pure state in which he identifies with the supersoul. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. This is also described in the, I believe, in the second chapter, basically, how the yogi performed, how the second chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, how the yogi will transfer himself to the spiritual world through yogic powers. The gradual process of elevation for self-realization is meant for those who are truly aware of the Absolute Truth. After repeated birth on this path, which is known as Devayan, one attains these consecutive stages. One who is completely free from all material desires, being situated in the self, need not traverse the path of repeated birth and death. Even though situated in a material body, one who is fully aware of the paths known as Pitriyan and Devayan, one who thus opens his eyes in terms of the Vedic knowledge is never bewildered in this material world. So he's going upward, upward, upward in a path, like a person who has a very strong purpose in his life. He doesn't look left, he doesn't look right. Just sees one thing and goes forward on that. There may be so many allurements, this side, up, down, but he doesn't see him. He doesn't become bewildered. He knows what he's trying to do. So such a person who knows these spiritual paths, gradual as they are, these are Vedic paths, he's never bewildered in the material world. Now, what is the goal? These different paths or margs have been mentioned. What is ultimately their goal? Because these chapters from 11 to 14 and now summed up in 15 are describing the purpose, or it's describing how to live a civilized life with a spiritual end and making use of the Vedic civilization of the Varnas and Ashramas and making use of the Vedic sacrifices and the path of renunciation, Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg, and now it's being explained in perspective, and ultimately the Nivritti Marg of going back to the spiritual world and getting rid of all material designations. So there is nothing separate. All the things of this world, nothing is separate from that Supreme Lord, who is the goal of all the different marks, all the different paths, because everything is connected to everything. Everything is connected to and rests upon the Absolute Truth. And there are different phases or understandings of the Absolute Truth. Prameti paramatmeti bhagavanti sabyate. But everything is coming from him. Janma yasyeta. Text 57. He who exists internally and externally, inside and outside, at the beginning and the end of everything, and of everything and of all living beings, as that which is enjoyable and as the enjoyer of everything, superior and inferior, is the Supreme Truth. He's at the end and in between and at the beginning. He always exists as knowledge and the object of knowledge. When you know something, the consciousness by which it is known is him. And the knower ultimately is him. And that which is known is him. He's expression and the object of understanding as darkness and as light. Thus he, the Supreme Lord, is everything. Darkness and light. Purport. Here, the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, is explained. It is also explained in the Chatur Sloki Bhagavatam, Aham Eva Sam Eva Gray. The Supreme Lord existed at the beginning. He exists after the creation and maintains everything, and after destruction, everything merges in Him. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Prakritim Yanti Mamakam, thus the Supreme Lord is actually everything. So He's the goal of all paths. Thus the Supreme Lord is actually everything. In the conditioned stage, we are bewildered in our understanding, but in the perfect stage of liberation, we can understand that Krishna is the cause of everything. Ishwara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adya Govinda, Sarva Karana Karana. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. So He is at the top of all realizations. Krishna. Sweet, sweet Krishna. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin. He is the prime cause of all causes. This is the perfection of knowledge. Now, here's where it starts getting somewhat complicated and technical. Although one may consider the reflection of the sun from a mirror to be false. So if we take a mirror and the sun is over there and I shine it against the wall, so is it or in somebody's eyes, and it appears as if the sun is going into your eyes, is it really? No. But yet it is in another sense. So the verse explains, although one may consider the reflection of the sun from a mirror to be false, it has its factual existence. Why? Because it's resting on something that's real. The sun is real, so therefore the reflection, although it is not the sun, but yet the reflection is real, because it is resting upon that which is real, the sun. It is not false, illusory. Accordingly, to prove by speculative knowledge that there is no reality would be extremely difficult. So now, the next verses are going to speak about how some people perceive the material world as illusion, false, mithya, jagat mithya. That they say Brahma Satyam, truth, or spiritual. Because in the previous verse it said that the Lord is everything. So in this verse, it's saying that although He is everything, the material world, to think that it has no existence, that it is completely illusory, one cannot prove this any more than one should think that the reflection of the sun is false, even though in one sense it's not the sun. Here's purport. So we're going on trying to explain what the truth is, what the absolute truth, and what's its relationship to the material world. So we've seen that the goal of all the paths and marks is that absolute truth. But what is that absolute truth? And what is the material world in relationship to the absolute truth? Is it false? Are there two separate things? Is there only one thing? Purport. The impersonalists try to prove that the varieties in the vision of the empiric philosophers are false. The impersonalist philosophy, Vivartavad, generally cites the acceptance of a rope to be a snake as an example of this fact. So if you walk outside and you see the garden hose, and of course here you don't see snakes in Perth, except if you go to the zoo or something. But in India, if you walk outside and you see a hose or a rope at night, you might jump back, because there are snakes around, or even in the bush. If you live out in a country house and you see something shaped like that, you'll immediately jump, because it could be a snake. But the impersonalist philosophers say, use this as an example and say, this is false. It's only a rope. It's just been illusion. Your fear, its cause, it is illusion. You're an illusion. The Vaishnavas say, however, that although the idea that the rope is a snake is false, the snake is not false. One has experience of a snake in reality. And therefore he knows that although the representation of the rope as a snake is false or illusory, there is a snake in reality. So in other words, Just by the fact that you mistake the rope or the hose for the snake means that somewhere, although you're wrong in that identification, but it means that somewhere a snake exists. Even though you're thinking that was a snake is not true, but that means a snake exists somewhere. The conception exists and the object exists of a snake. So the Mayavadis say, oh, this is false. But that doesn't mean that the snake was false, or they say it, the material world, you're thinking that the material world is tangible, and that's false, we agree. But it implies that the real thing exists somewhere else. It's not here, just like the snake isn't here when we see the rope. In an illusion, we mistake the rope for the snake. But that means the snake is there somewhere else. So the reality that we're looking for, although it's not here in the material world, the love, the permanence, the relationship, the sweetness, it's not here, and that's our illusion, but it exists somewhere else. So Prabhupada continues, similarly, this world which is full of varieties is not false, it is a reflection of the reality in the Vaikuntha world, the spiritual world. The reflection of the sun from a mirror is nothing but light within darkness. Thus, although it is not exactly sunlight, without the sunlight, the reflection would be impossible. Similarly, the varieties of this world would be impossible unless there were a real prototype in the spiritual world. So the impersonalists say that everything is one. And you're mistaking them for varieties. And we say the fact that we're mistaking them for varieties is because there is a reflection in the material world of reality, of the real world. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this example is given. So the real prototype, the real thing exists in the spiritual world. The Mayavadi philosophers cannot understand this, but a real philosopher must be convinced that light is not possible at all without the background of sunlight. Thus, the jugglery of words used by the Mayavadi philosophers to prove that this material world is false may amaze inexperienced children, but a man with full knowledge knows perfectly well there cannot be any existence without Krishna. Therefore, a Vaishnava insists on the platform of somehow or another accepting Krishna. When we raise our unmixed faith to the lotus feet of Krishna, everything is revealed. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Shakta Manaparta Yogam Yunjan Marashraya Asamsaya Samagramam Yata Gyasitashanu. Now hear, O son of Pita Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Simply by raising one's staunch faith in Krishna and his instructions, one can understand reality without a doubt. Asamsayam samagramam. One can understand how Krishna's material and spiritual energies are working and how he is present everywhere, although everything is not in him. This philosophy of achintya beta beta, inconceivable oneness and difference, is the perfect philosophy enunciated by the Vaishnavas. So everything is one in one sense. Everything is one, all paths are one, but it doesn't mean that the material world with its varieties are false. Now, we'll continue. These are actually complex philosophical issues that are discussed in these verses. So what is the relationship between... So if the material world, Vaishnavas say it's not illusion, what is actually the relationship between the Absolute Truth and that which exists in the material world? So an example is going to be given in this verse, text 59. In this world, there are five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and?
Ether,
yes. But the body is not a reflection of them. So what is the relationship between the body and the elements? First of all, which is prior, the body or the elements? The body rests upon the elements. there are elements, and the body is composed of those elements. So an analogy is going to be given, with the absolute truth being like the elements, and that of the material world is like the body, because as the everything rests upon the absolute truth, the material world included, because how can it be independent of the absolute truth? Then it wouldn't be absolute, all-inclusive. Same way, everything rests upon the elements. The body rests upon the elements as the material world rests on the absolute truth. So here's an example. In this world, there are five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So what is the relationship between the body and these elements? So the verse continues, but the body is not a reflection of them, nor a combination or transformation of them. So it's not just, the body is more than just a reflection of the elements, and it's not just a combination, because how could you just combine it and get it to work as a body? You can take a lump of earth. That's what that's our Prabhupada's argument against the scientists. How could life just as a combination of elements? You do it. You take the earth, you take the water, you take the fire, you take the blood, you put it all together and see if you can make it come to life. No. So it's not just a combination, nor is it a transformation, a mixture in some way in transforming one into another. It's something else completely different. Because the body and its ingredients are neither distinct nor amalgamated, they're not separate nor together. It's something completely different. It's not just the elements put together, nor are they separate elements, nor are they just all merged together. So all such theories are insubstantial, meaning they're incomplete. They're not sufficient to explain the actual nature of the body. So again, this is an analogy to describe the relationship between the material world and the absolute truth upon which it rests. We'll read the last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport, text 59. Since all the Lord's energies are simultaneously existing, one must understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But although He is everything, He is not present in everything. This is again the Achintya Beta Beta philosophy of Mahaprabhu. The Lord must be worshipped in His original form. So you can't be pantheistic and say, oh, God is everywhere, nothing is separate from Him. So I can worship the desk and the rock and the tree and the earth and the earthworm. It's as good as worshipping God. No. Although He is everywhere and everything, He's more than that too. Everything is not Him. When we worship the deity of the Lord in the temple, the deity appears to be stone or wood. Now, because the Supreme Lord does not have a material body, He is not stone or wood, yet stone and wood are not different from Him. Thus, by worshipping stone or wood, we get no results. But when the stone and wood are represented in the Lord's original form, by worshipping the deity, we get the desired results. So we can't worship stone and wood, but we can worship the Lord in the form of stone and wood, because when the Lord is in the form of stone or wood, he's stone and wood, but He's not just stone and wood, He's something else. He's there as well, personally. This is supported by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Achintya Beta Beta, which explains how the Lord can present Himself everywhere and anywhere in a form of His energy to accept service from His devotee. Now, so again, explaining the relationship between everything and the Lord, and that example was given between the elements and the body. Continuing. Because the body is formed of the five elements, it cannot exist without the subtle sense objects. So if you remember in the third canto of the Bhagavatam and the second canto of the Bhagavatam, where the creation is described, from false ego in the mode of ignorance, if I'm not mistaken, from false ego mixing with the mode of ignorance comes the subtle, first thing that's produced, the elements are produced, and the first one is ether. So the elements are produced, and from the elements come the sense objects. So from ether comes sound. And then finally, from the sense objects, the senses are produced. And from so it's ether, sound, and then the ear is produced. So the body is composed of the senses. So in this cycle, in this progression, trying to understand where the body comes from, the body comes from, which is composed of the senses, comes from the sense object. So when something comes from something else, its existence is dependent upon it. So therefore, because the body is formed of the five elements, it cannot exist without the subtle sense objects. So if the cause of something doesn't exist, then the result cannot exist. So, because no one can imagine, for example, me existing if my parents never existed. How could I exist if my parents didn't exist? So, in the same way, because the sense objects are the cause of the senses, therefore the body, which is composed of the senses, is dependent on the subtle sense objects. Therefore, since the body is false, if the body was false, the sense objects are naturally false or temporary. So there's the logic in this is saying, so if you're saying that which is produced, the body, the material things are false or illusory, because again this is all a refutation of the Mayavad philosophy and personal philosophy, because they say the material world is false. So if the body is false and the body is come from the sense objects, therefore the sense objects must be false, because falsity comes from falsity and truth comes from truth. It's a principle of logic. So in the analogy that we're giving, or that is given in the Bhagavatam, if the material world is false, just like if the body is false and the sense objects, its cause must be false, then the absolute truth must also be false. So you can't say, therefore, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mitya, that the absolute truth is real and that which comes from the absolute truth or the material world is false. So that's what's being explained over here. Next verse. When a substance and its parts are separated, the acceptance of similarity between one and the other is called illusion. So it's again trying to change to clarify our conception of the relationship between the material world and the absolute truth upon which it rests. So the first thing that was said in the verses that we read, that everything rests upon the Lord, the absolute truth, which is one. But yet, the material world is not illusion. And it is not false, and the absolute truth is real. So is the material world something different from the absolute truth? So in these verses, it's stressing the oneness, but not the illusory oneness, and not the impersonalist oneness, and that's going to come out very soon, if we survive that long with the explanation. But it will be hard for me, if we don't keep going, it's going to be hard for me to imagine continuing tomorrow and having to pick up this whole frame of reference. So onward we shall go. So when a substance and its parts are separated, the acceptance of similarities between one and the other is called illusion. So one can't separate the parts and the substance and find similarities. You have to consider the whole thing as one or together. An example is like if you have a watch and you're trying to understand the watch and you take apart the watch, and what happens if you open up a watch? What will be inside? It depends obviously what kind of watch you have. But whatever kind of watch you have, whether you have a quartz watch or a mechanical self-winding watch or one that you turn the stem yourself or something you stick a battery in and it's all electronic. Whatever it is, if you look at one of those parts, you'll never be able to find any similarity between that and the watch itself. What does a watch do? It keeps time. Does a little spring or a little mainspring, does that have anything to do with keeping time? No, you won't be able to find it like that. So to try to find the acceptance of similarity between one and the other, the part and the whole, is illusion. And then in another... So in other words, he's making the point that there is no separation between the parts and the whole. If you try to separate and then try to find similarity, then you'll just to get similarity to say one is real and one is false, and then to say yet it's all the same, that's called illusion, to find similarity from the part and the whole. And then another example here. While dreaming, to show that there's oneness. While dreaming, one creates a separation between the existences called wakefulness and sleep. When you're asleep, are you aware of being awake? No, at least when I'm asleep, I'm not aware of being awake. So there's a whole separate consciousness that you lose awareness of. So while dreaming, one creates a separation between the existences called wakefulness and sleep. When you're awake, you say, oh, sometimes I'm sleeping and I dream this. So you're seeing that there's a parallel between the awaking state and the dreaming state because there's only one person. But when you're in illusion or dreaming, ignorance, you can't see that. You're only partially aware. So there's, instead of seeing two states, you see, you're missing something. So it is in such a state of mind, and then even when one is aware of dreaming and being awake, one sees one person. So one sees the oneness in both states of consciousness. So you wake up in the morning and say, boy, I just had such an amazing dream. Actually, last night I did have an amazing dream, now that I think about it. You know what I dreamt about? I dreamt about Prabhupada. Yeah, it was a wonderful dream. He wasn't so happy with me, though. But in any case, but it was me awake now who had the dream too. Same person, oneness. It is in such a state of mind that when one is only aware of the dreaming state, that the regulative principles of the scriptures consisting of the injunctions and prohibitions are recommended. Why to wake one up? So they when one sees a duality, then one needs to be awakened, and therefore one follows the regulative principles. So the point being that separation, not seeing the oneness of everything in existence. So usually Prabhupada will criticize oneness, but actually there is a oneness of everything because there's the absolute truth. So there is a separation. To see separation is illusion. Now three different types of oneness are going to be described in text 62. After considering the oneness of existence, activity, and paraphernalia. So existence, activity, and paraphernalia. So to see oneness in all these three realms, dravya means paraphernalia, or later it's going to mean intent. Oneness of existence. Everything exists as one. Everything, all activities are one. And all the paraphernalia of existence is also one. So after considering the oneness of existence, activity, and paraphernalia, and after realizing the self to be different from all actions and reactions, realizing the self to be eternal, while the actions and reactions, the calm, are temporary, the mental speculator, the muni, and these kind of verses are meant for the munis, they're not meant so much for the devotees, in case you didn't notice. The mental speculator, the muni, according to his own realization, gives up the three states of wakefulness, dreaming, and sleep. So he separates himself from those things, understanding the oneness of everything, including his state of consciousness. Now, one by one, these three different states of consciousness are going to be described. describe the onenesses. Onenesses of existence, oneness of activity, kriya, and the third is of dravya, or paraphernalia, or intent. So in bhava-dvaita, advaita means oneness, dvaita means duality, advaita means oneness, there's a oneness in everything, conceptual oneness, an interconnectedness of all things. Illusion is called dvayam dvitiya, by seeing separation of things. When we see everything as Krishna's mercy, everything in existence, there is such a freedom in that, and there's no fear. So the text 3063, when one understands that result and cause are one, that Krishna is the cause of everything and the result of everything, and the devotee sees it as mercy, and that duality, and duality is ultimately unreal, like the idea that the threads of a cloth are different from the cloth itself, one reaches the conception of oneness called bhava-dvaita. 64. My dear Yudhisthira Partha, when all the activities one performs with his mind, words, and body are dedicated directly to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one reaches oneness of activities called kriya-dvaita. So there is a oneness, but yet there is difference in that oneness. So specifically in this verse it says, sarva karma samarpanam, all karma offered with devotion, manovak, mind, vak, words, tanubi, the body, kriya-dvaita taluchate, everything should be offered with devotion, samarpanam. Prabhupada's purport. The Krishna consciousness movement is teaching people how to come to the stage of dedicating everything to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yat karosi rachnasi yat johosi didasi yat yat tapasyasi kanteyat tat karusva manarpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me. And whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we think, whatever we plan, is for the advancement of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is oneness. This is, we can become one. There is no difference between chanting for Krishna consciousness and working for Krishna consciousness. Right. One, on the transcendental platform they are one, but we must be guided by the spiritual master about this oneness. We should not manufacture our own oneness. And now dravya-dvaita, before Prabhupada translated that as oneness of paraphernalia of the objects of the material world, and here oneness of interest. When the ultimate goal and interest of oneself, one's wife, one's children, one's relatives, and all other embodied living beings is one, that is called dravya-dvaita, or oneness of interest. Purport. The actual interest of all living entities, indeed the goal of life, is to return home back to Godhead. This is the interest of one's own self, one's wife, one's children, one's disciples, and one's friends, relatives, countrymen, and all humanity. The Krishna consciousness movement can give directions for management by which everyone can partake in Krishna conscious activities and reach the ultimate goal, which is known as svatagatim. This objective of everyone's interest is Vishnu, but because people do not know this, nate vidu svatagatim hi Vishnu, they are making various plans by which to fulfill so many concocted interests in life. And everyone is seeing duality only. And they're feeling very separate from everything. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to bring everyone to the highest interest. The process may be differently named, but the aim is one, and people should follow it to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Unfortunately, people are thinking of different interests, and blind leaders are misleading them. Everyone is trying to reach the goal of complete happiness materially. Because people do not know what complete happiness is, they are materially diverted towards different interests. So just a little more. Thank you for your patience tonight. Just, we'll read 66, 67, and 68. Krishna willing. In a normal condition, in the absence of danger. So how should one act in oneness and not in duality? In normal conditions, in the absence of danger, O King Yudhisthira, a man should perform his prescribed duties according to his status of life with the things, endeavor, processes, and living places that are not forbidden for him and not by any other means. So one should discharge his prescribed duties because he's speaking to the king and telling the king how to act in ruling the citizens. Everyone should, all the citizens, and you yourself should be one in your endeavor, your interest, and see oneness in everything, in your work, within the boundaries of your prescribed duties, of the proper way to act. But the oneness for a devotee, of course, is for the pleasure of Krishna. Everything, the endeavor, the intent, everything is Krishna's, not different from Krishna. And what's the purpose? O king, one should perform his occupational duties, because the original question that was asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj is how one could achieve the platform that Prahlad Maharaj attained of such intense absorption in Lord Nrisimhadev, in God, that he was fearless everywhere. Even in true danger, he was fearless. So what's the purpose of all, how to organize society in all these different ways? Well, it's been to explain, to see the oneness of everything through devotion. And this is all going to become still more clearer. O king, one should perform his occupational duties, because it was also described how society should be organized in Varnanashrama, as well as other instructions given in the Vedic literatures, just to remain a devotee of Lord Krishna. Thus, even while at home, one will be able to reach the destination. So that's the purpose of the injunctions, of all the instructions that were given how to organize the society. Tad bhaktabhak. One who renders devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of God in Nara, Gatim, he can reach the supreme destination by his occupational duties. If he becomes one with the Lord, doesn't have a dual or separate interest. Purport, and then we'll read the final piece. The ultimate goal of life is Vishnu. Therefore, either by Vedic regulative principles or by materialistic activities, if one tries to reach the destination of Krishna, that is the perfection of life. Krishna should be the target. Everyone should try to reach Krishna from any position of life. Krishna accepts service from anyone. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, O son of Prita, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower births, women, vaishyas, merchants, as well as sudras, workers, anyone can approach the supreme destination. It does not matter what one's position is. If one aims at reaching Krishna by performing his occupational duty under the direction of the spiritual master, his life is successful. It is not only that sannyasis, vanaprastas, and brahmacharis can reach Krishna. A grihastha, householder, can also reach Krishna, provided he becomes a pure devotee without material desires. An example of this is cited in the next verse, the final verse. O King Yudhisthira, because of your service to the Supreme Lord, all of you Pandavas defeated the greatest dangers posed by numerous kings and demigods. By serving the lotus feet of Krishna, you conquered great enemies who were like elephants, and thus you collected ingredients for sacrifice. By his grace, may you be delivered from material involvement. Prabhupada's purport. Placing himself as an ordinary householder, Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni how a greedy mudhadi, a person who is entangled in household life and who thus continues to remain a fool, can be delivered. Because in the 14th chapter, the first verse, Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni about this. Madrasa griha mudadi, the foolish person. Oh my Lord, oh great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation according to the instructions of the Vedas. So all this has been an explanation of that. So So ultimately everything must be focused on Krishna. Because of your service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you Pandavas were perfectly successful. Again, Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni how a Griha Mudadi, a person who is entangled in household life and who thus continues to remain a fool, can be delivered. Narada Muni encouraged Maharaj Yudhisthira by saying, "You are already on the safe side because you, along with your entire family, have become a pure devotee of Krishna." And that is the sole qualification for being delivered through bhakti, becoming a pure devotee. By Krishna's grace, the Pandavas conquered in the battle of Kurukshetra and was saved from many dangers posed not only by kings, but sometimes even by the demigods. Thus they are a practical example of how to live in security and safety by the grace of Krishna. Everyone should follow the example of the Pandavas, who showed how to be saved by the grace of Krishna. Our Krishna consciousness movement is intended to teach how everyone can live peacefully in this material world and at the end of life return home back to Godhead. In the material world there are always dangers at every step, padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Nonetheless, if one takes shelter of Krishna without hesitation and keeps under the shelter of Krishna, he can easily cross the ocean of nescience. Samasritaye parapalava plavam mahatpadam bunyaya shomarari. To the devotee, this great ocean of nescience becomes like a puddle of water in the hoofprint of a cow. The great ocean of nescience shrinks to the size of the water that fills a cow's hoofprint. A pure devotee, without embarrassing himself by trying for elevation in so many ways, stays in the safest position as a servant of Krishna, and thus his life is eternally safe, without a doubt. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Narada Muni Sri Yudhisthira Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Tomorrow the class will be shorter.